My bank has just offered to increase my overdraft limit on my credit card.
Hey, that's never, ever happened to me.
If that isn't a national, you know, demonstration
indicator, that's an
improving economy, I have no idea what it is.
That's an amazing economic indicator. Oh, my dear.
This episode of Stand Up Business is sponsored by Fluid Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981, and pioneers in foundational financial literacy.
Mark, good morning. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm encouraged by some trends and discouraged by others, which, you know, I seem to see some movements emerging. So let me name a few, if you like. I'm very well, as it turns out.
Okay.
And so is Eskom.
Okay.
Eskom's recovery is a case study that beggars belief. Don't you think we're now switching capacity off? Okay. Because we've got too much electricity. I'm going to say that again in Afrikaans. Ons het te veel elektrisiteit, because it's hard to believe in English. Okay. What happened, Tim? And so that's the one trend. We've solved electricity, Or what was wrong? What was the blockage? It's as if we've released a blockage and no one's told us what that was. Was it the rocks in the system, or was it the, I don't know, but it's almost miraculous. Water, on the other hand, is a trend that's drying up, so to speak, and it's the new focal area, okay? And then, you know, another trend, and I'll finish my little list, is state capture cases are starting to go on trial, or have I got a little bit optimistic, or reading too many bits of news? Anyway, state capture is now in focus, it seems to me, starting to do things. There's this new minister versus old minister energy trend, which is getting things going. So, a lot of green shoots, in my view, Tim, that are emerging out of what one might have described as the sludge of pre-election South Africa. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. There has been definitely a kind of like, the arrows are sort of pointing upwards. And I know this personally because my bank has just offered to increase my overdraft limit on my credit card.
Hey, here we go. That's never, ever happened to me.
If that isn't a national, you know, demonstration.
Indicator. That's an
improving economy. I have no idea what it is.
That's an amazing economic indicator. Oh, my dear.
Leading indicator. Obviously, it is.
Yeah.
Because if they are... if they think that journalists are a better risk than they were like a couple of months ago,
yeah,
but then really, you know, we've hit rock bottom and we're heading upwards. but you know, to me, I mean, it's great to do, these green shoots are all very great and stuff, but there are also a couple of trends which have remained the same, right? The one trend that has remained absolutely the same is that the brave new world is going to be brought about by a collaboration between government and business. And there's going to be a big meeting between government and business tomorrow. And this is what we've been hearing about from Cyril Ramaphosa right from, you know, really right from the start, you know, but intensifying, you know, sort of after the election. So now, why do you think there's a kind of business?
Let me hazard a guess.
Okay.
We, when I say we, I mean business is government's new best friend.
Okay.
Yes. NBFs, that's what we are. And there's one reason that I would like to propose, although I'm sure way off the mark, they need money.
No.
Okay.
No. You're kidding.
No.
Surely not that.
Maybe they just figured that we're nice guys, okay? Because money is just a commodity, okay?
Yes.
And so I actually think what we need to talk about is transfer of expertise and, you know, those kinds of partnerships. But, yeah, I think it's money, Tim. When your kids sidle up to you and go, hey, Dad, man, oh, that is so great to see you, or what, you know, then you go like, okay, have you run out of pocket money, boy? Hey? Yeah. I think they've run out of pocket money, Tim, eh? I don't know.
Yeah. I like the fact that there is a sort of collaborative effort going on. I mean, it obviously helped in the Eskom case. So it has a proven record here, as you were pointing out. But you know what I don't like about it is this sort of notion that basically the problem here is that business is not coming to the party, you know, because there's a sort of slight implication here.
Explain.
Well, no, I just sense this feeling that government feels that it is not the problem.
Yeah.
Government feels that the problem here is, you know, you hear these words like investment strike. oh, there's an investment strike, which, you know, A, is not true.
No.
But B, the problem is that it's not that business is not coming to the party. It's that quite often government's criteria are different from business's criteria. And
that's where you've got it. You've got it in one.
I still sense, you know, there's a disconnect there, or there's a lack of recognition, maybe on both sides, you know, about what both want out of the relationship.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, man. You know, it's actually been a focal point of mine for some time. Here's the thing. The political currency of reward is very different than the business currency of reward. The political currency of reward is getting votes and money. Okay. Now, there's a different way that government gets money than business makes money. Business makes money, government takes money. And there's just one little letter between the two, an M and the M versus the T.
Quite crucial letter.
But when you take money, okay, because taxes aren't earned by the government, they're taken by the government. They make a law, and they can willy-nilly change the law by increasing VAT or increasing some other import tax or do whatever they like. And so they're deep understanding of the cost of money is significantly different from those who build it up through hard work and earning and the like. And then the next step is they disperse that money to an even lower level of understanding of money, which is the municipalities, which then spend it. Okay. And until we get to a point where there's a common and deep and fundamental understanding of finance and the cost and allocation of capital and the opportunity costs, we will never solve this problem.
Yeah. No, totally right. You know, last week, I spent quite a lot of time looking at the issue of designation. So this is part of the new Public Procurement Act. And, you know, there's quite big changes have been made, and these are good changes. Obviously, they've had problems with this before, and they're sort of looking forward. And I don't want to deride this aspect of the Act, because they have been looking at it and they've changed.
Yeah.
But what designation means is it's basically what government determines government institutions can buy. It's basically a local sourcing requirement. So, you know, what I didn't realize is that there's now something like 100 either products or product fields. You know, enormous, you know, huge ranges of products that government and government institutions are not allowed to buy unless they're locally made, right? And they range from very simple things like wheelie bins to entire sectors like textiles and clothing. You know, how do you do that? And this is not just the government, right? The existing amount set is like 100%, you know? So if you are trying to find a specialized boot for the firefighters in your municipality, by the by, you're not allowed to buy it unless it's locally created. And if it's not locally created, then what do you do? Well, then you apply in triplicate to the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, and then you wait for them to come to a conclusion about whether or not you're not allowed to buy a damn boot. Now, this has been changed really dramatically. The changes are mostly good. So it's much easier now to find out, to get something exempt. And they're going to re-examine all of the sectors, obviously. But we've had this legislation now on the statute books for a decade. That's the one indication, you know.
This flies in the face of efficient markets.
Okay. Yes.
We are gifted certain natural resources, and we have developed certain internationally competitive skills and products and services. And so, you know, we export what we're good at, and we import what other people are better at, because the economies of scale of being good lower the price. I mean, this is not economics 3. This is economics minus 1. Okay. I mean, this is like, if someone can make 100,000 widgets and you are not allowed to buy them, but you have to make your own 10 widgets, you know, guess which widget you're going to pay more for? And so there are two real questions there. What causes that thinking, that protectionism, that guarding, that barrier, that lager? What causes it, A, and B, what are its deep, enduring consequences? And what causes it is a desire to sort of keep things amongst us. And what its long-term consequence is that we become dependent. We become, you know, less efficient. We become weaker, not stronger. So I don't get it. I just don't get it.
No. It is interesting. It's interesting because, you know, my perception is that this is not just a problem with the ANC, but it's right across the board. The DA, parts of the Freedom Front, you know, they all believe in the notion of, you know, local industrialization. You know, they really passionately believe in the utility and the desirability of it. And, you know, I think I know why they believe this. And the answer is this.
Steel. Fist. What?
No, China. They think this is the way China developed. You know what I mean? They think that China developed by industrializing, by closing everybody out. And in certain circumstances, that's true. But generally speaking, the absolute opposite is true. China only started developing when it's welcomed in the world, not in its "we are going to do this all by ourselves" stage of its existence. Well, it didn't develop at all.
No, we need to be invited.
Anyway, let's change the topic. Let's talk about something more fun.
Okay.
I want to talk about the Olympics because I'm interested in all kinds of Olympics statistics. And can I just say, as an introduction, like almost every Parisian, I thought about the Olympics with dread and ended up feeling incredibly warm and cuddly and fuzzy about it all. I mean, it was just magnificent. And we did so well. You know, it was just great. I mean, you know, South Africa, you know, normally gets about 6 medals. We got 6 medals this year. That's much better than we got last year and the last time and the time before. So great.
That's double what we got in Tokyo. Double what we got in Tokyo. I'm just on the big picture. Yes, it's an extraordinary event, and you can't help but be swooped up into it. And the facilities were quite extraordinarily well managed, and the whole thing was well managed and so on. And the decision making, the evidence based decision making, instant decision making, is one of the things that impressed me most. You lost by 100th of a second or 5,000th of a second. End of discussion. Okay, it was well run. What I'm not convinced about is the need for such elaborate, you know, before and afters. The opening and closing ceremonies, imagine if we just did without them and went straight into the Olympics. But anyway.
Okay, so here's my question. Why do the words per capita spike during the Olympics in New Zealand? Apparently the searches for the words per capita in New Zealand.
Because they perform, because they bat above their weight. Okay, because and I know this only from rugby. I mean, New Zealand has a population of 5 million something, and we have a population of 60 million. You know, other countries, USA, 350 million, whatever it is, but they are the best rugby players in the world. Or well, they used to be. They're probably third now. But yeah, it's because they're batting above their weight, isn't it?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think it's basically because of Australia. because Australia does, I think Australia does really well in the Olympics. Really, it was just pro forma, you know, Australia has punched massively above its weight. So the internecine battle between New Zealanders and Australians, which continues from, you know, time immemorial and will continue until, you know, the new millennium arrives, there's always a battle between Australia and New Zealand about who did best per capita. Okay. So now, can I tell you the answer to this question?
You're gonna. Yeah.
Okay. New Zealand got 20 medals. It is the fourth best performing country per capita. In other words, medals divided by population.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know who the winner is?
You're going to tell me.
Well, obviously. Grenada.
Granada.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'll give anyone 10 bucks who can guess that.
But it is quite an interesting list. I mean, actually, South Africa does quite badly on this list, which is very interesting. I thought that Botswana was going to do great because actually Botswana had a fantastic Olympics. They got 2 medals, which is a record for them. And in fact, that it points to something which I think is a trend, since you are so interested in trends now. but I do think it is interesting how many countries won races or got medals in races or in codes or sports that they've never got medals before. You know, Botswana's never mind never getting medals. It's never got medals in the 100 meters, you know, the most prestigious race in the whole Olympics by some standards.
Well, that's amazing. Well, I'd like to know what the correlation is between the per capita spending on sport and the per capita, you know, medals table that you referred to. Because I bet in New Zealand they spend an extraordinary amount of money on developing their sportsmen and women. Because to be honest, Tim, I'll say in softly, there's nothing much else to do there, but okay. So I think it's got to do with spending. I don't know how much money we invest in the sporting future of our people.
Well, no, this is one of the bad things about this. Yeah. So South Africa got a silver in the 4x4.
That was wonderful. I loved it.
So that's, a fantastic race. Absolutely brilliant. So do you know how many of the four athletes who took part in the race are supported by our Olympic Committee?
No, I don't know. None?
One. One out of the four.
Oh, it's a disgrace. That's a disgrace.
Yeah, it's a disgrace. Our javelin thrower, who has got into the finals in the past three Olympics, this time got a silver, which is just magnificent, magnificent performance. The dedication to go to two Olympic Games, come back with nothing, and to go to a third one. Okay, so did she get support from the Olympic Committee? A little bit. She got some accommodation, which, by the way, wasn't even provided by the Olympic Committees, right? It's provided by the host.
No, it's a disgrace, actually. It's an absolute disgrace. Because, first of all, by the way, just a correction, it was the 4x100 that we got the silver for, not the 4x400. But the consequences of developing sport, we should surely have seen what a winning world champion rugby team has done for the goodwill amongst peoples. And we should surely see how relatively inexpensive it would be to create national pride through that vehicle. And so I hope they get their act together with hindsight now and go spend some. There are two things we need to spend money on a lot more. One is education, the other is sport, and of course, healthcare and others are in that crowded space, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting this, because the other statistic I'm interested in is how much you get as an athlete if you win a medal from your Olympic committee, from your Olympic organizing committee. So the country that you get most, say, for gold, right?
Is US.
Is Hong Kong.
Oh.
No, it's actually Hong Kong. You get $768,000 if you win a gold medal from the Hong Kong government, right? The States is pretty high. You get $38,000. How much do you get if you're South African?
768 Rand.
Yes, it's close. For athletes winning gold, it's 400,000 Rand. And for athletes winning bronze, it's in the relays, you get 100,000 Rand.
No, you're kidding me, Jim.
I am not telling you a lie.
Shame, man. Sis, man. No.
Sis, man.
Yeah, sis. Okay. Spishoy. Yeah.
What's the difference between investing and speculating? Should you time the markets or spend time in the markets? What is risk and why spend so much time managing it? Why is compounding considered the most powerful force in the universe? And why is time one of the most important elements in the compounding formula? Learn these and other key investment principles from one of the best in the industry. In his book, Time in the Markets, Dave Fuad, founder of Fuad Asset Management, shares anecdotes and experiences earned over decades immersed in the markets. Valuable insight that will have you investing successfully for the long term. Download your free copy of Time in the Markets from their website, fuad.co.za, that is F-O-O-R-D. And while you're there, look out for Fuad Industries' first Teach Your Child to Invest picture book series about saving and investing. Fuad Asset Management, investment stewards since 1981 and pioneers in foundational financial literacy. All right, new topic.
I saw somewhere that we're going to be, it's a favorite bugbear of mine, that we're going to be 80 billion shy. I think it was an Investec research that produced 80 billion shy in the budget. And people were looking to this two-pot system, which gives people spending money to fill that gap. I think that would be really short-sighted as a source of money. And it'll have consequences in its payback, which will linger long after the sugar coating has been spent. Anyway, I'm strongly opposed to this getting money out in advance from your savings. On that high note, I'm fresh out of it. But I do feel that there's an undercurrent, a will, and some evidence of us gathering in the name of good futures. Yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, that's very nice. And we're now approaching summer, or at least some version of summer.
This, we always fall for this trick, this premature summer. Okay. You wake up and you think, summer's arrived, as it did here, like 2 days ago in Joburg. And then about 3 days later, it goes, excuse me, what did you say?
Yeah,
and
yeah, excuse me. Yeah, yeah.
You get one more.
Let me just take a little nibble out of your ass.
Yeah, just get that heat out the cupboard, big man. Okay. Next week.
All righty. Look after yourself.